think it's recording right now because I can see the microphone. It's doing dots and input and all that.
Okay, and I've pressed mine too. Red dot turns black, right?
Yes, correct.
So we're both recording.
Okay, how do I sound?
You sound good. How do I sound?
You sound fantastic.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I solved that sound problem.
That's great.
Just one of our many sound problems.
Sure. That's great, though. So I'm Candy Minx in Chicago. Happy New Year for the agency.
Wait.
Okay. All right. Start over.
Question. Yes. Which episode are we doing?
I'd like to do the mini episode first, I think.
Okay. Well, it helps me if I know.
Right. I was going to text you, and then you called. I was texting you which first? When you phoned.
I see.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Five, four, three, two, one. Hello and Happy New Year. Welcome to the agency. This is Eugene Napick in Toronto, and I'm with Candy Minx in Chicago. Hi, Candy.
Hi. Happy New Year, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to do a mini episode today.
I'm looking forward to that. We both got out to see the Safdie Brothers film, Uncut Gems, and we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah, I'm really curious to hear what you thought about it.
Well, I thought it was quite a film. I mean, it was visually magnificent, and it was incredibly intense, gold rush roller coaster of a movie.
I agree. I loved it. I'm a believer. I'm going to be one of their biggest fans. I thought it was refreshing and fantastic and a great story. I love Adam Sandler. I love everything about him. So it was fantastic to see him in this movie. I was impressed by all the actors and all the casting. Have you ever seen any of their other films?
No, I haven't. Not one.
Well, they have Good Time, and it's on Netflix, and I did watch it. And it's also just fantastic. Now, I think that Uncut Gems is going to a whole new level, but you can see everything about them in this movie called Good Time. And Robert Pattinson, who was a teenage heartthrob in the Twilight vampire movies, he contacted them when he saw some of their other films and said, I want to work for you. And they made this script with him in mind. And it's a heist film. It's not unlike the Uncut Gems. And the same musician, what about that soundtrack? Did you love it?
Yes.
Brilliant. That is what's his name? I'm going to have to Google it now. I did know it a few minutes ago because he's got a funny band name. He's an electronic and noise musician raised in Massachusetts, but working in Brooklyn. And he got a Cannes Award for his soundtrack on that film, Good Time. And he does the music for Uncut Gems.
Ah, well, plus there's an appearance by the Canadian rapper, Weeknd.
That's right. He was fantastic, too. I loved it.
Yeah, I thought he was really good, too.
Yeah. Okay, well, do you want to do a kind of a rundown of the film? Or?
Well, sure. It has, first of all, the most wonderful beginning of a film I think I've seen in ages. Ooh. It starts in Ethiopia in a mine. Where these dudes are, it looks like they're sneaking around in a mine. There's some kind of action going on. It's not clear what's going on exactly. And these guys go deep into this cave and they've got like a hammer and chisel and they hammer out this rock that has this incredible black opal in it.
Right.
And when you see the black opal, it transforms you into this psychedelic black opal world. I mean, how else would you describe it, Candy?
I think you did a great job. I think it's also very reminiscent of 60s films where they have a kind of a theme at the beginning and it's, you know, instead of, you know, they had all the illustration because it's animated beginning, basically that jewel. You go inside this jewel. And I thought that was incredible. And later on, it starts to hit me that it comes back throughout the film that it's very metaphysical. It's a very metaphysical, spiritual, I don't know if it's religious, something, that there's something about it that's otherworldly. And I think that's part of the overall theme in the movie, but we can get to that later.
Yes, but there is also some irony in that because the opening shot kind of transforms into a doctor looking at a monitor of what he would see through a scope during a colonoscopy.
Correct. Correct.
Right. So it goes from Ethiopia to the internal organs.
Right, you're right. And it doesn't stop. You don't know where you're coming out. You're following the, you're traveling through this gem, and it might even be like space. And then the next thing you know, it starts to be evident that you're in a physical body, a human body. And I think that's super important. To me, that is the going to be part of this, the weird subtext of a spiritual perspective, for me anyway. And I like that. So you see him, you see the main character, Howard, he's getting the treatment, and he comes out and goes about his day. And what a day he has.
He's a jeweler. Mm-hmm. I guess he's a diamond dealer in New York's Diamond District. And he is an addict. He's not a drug addict. Okay. He's a gambling addict. He's addicted to the big score.
Okay.
And the entire movie, he ups the ante as the movie goes on from one thing to another, and he juggles his entire life. Everything in his life is being juggled so that he can go after this big score.
Right.
And at the heart of the big score is he somehow mysteriously winds up with this rock with the opals in it, which get delivered to him in a box of fish.
Yes, it's fantastic. And he knows what it is. He knows the fish, which is great, because that's going to harken back to the Godfather and to the Irishman with Swims with Fishes. So in a weird way, for me, I'm going to tell you my impression overall. You've done it great. There's a plot. He gets the stone. He has to sell the stone. And it's the opal. I thought it was going to be diamonds at first, and they were going to chisel them out and cut them. I didn't realize it was literally going to be uncut gems. And I think the metaphor, too, is that the human beings in this movie are uncut gems. They're diamonds waiting to be formed, too, which goes back to alchemy. That the idea in alchemy isn't that you turn, you know, that metaphor, you turn lead to gold. What they're really talking about is you're turning your spirit into gold. The rocks are one thing to turn something like a rock or lead into gold, but really it's a philosophical gold you're looking for in alchemy. In the old days, in the Renaissance and ancient primordial religions. Okay, so for me, this movie was Kafka. This, to me, somebody's done something wrong. He's done something wrong, and he is in the middle of a terrible interrogation. I felt like Kafka was just laughing at me. I felt like it's Thanatos, the death force, the death wish versus life force. I thought about the movie The Pawnbroker. The Pawnbroker was one of those movies with Rod Sterling that I saw like the Valentine's Day Massacre, where I was homesick, and it had a profound effect on me. And in The Pawnbroker, he is suffering from his life, but Howard is thriving with this life. Whatever you want to say that he's being crazy, to me, this man is more alive than most of us. I felt him running. I can see why we would say he was addicted, but I see something else going on. There's a death wish there, or is there a life force wish? And most of the movie, I wasn't really sure.
I watched a video that was an interview with the Sadfi brothers, and there's various of them on YouTube, and I'll see that we post one or two of them, because they're very interesting. These guys are really interesting guys.
They are.
And they make a point in one of these videos. You might think this character is a loser, but he's not a loser. He's a winner who just doesn't win.
I think he's a winner, too. I didn't know they said that, but to me, he's absolutely a winner. It's funny because I read something, too, where Adam Sandler was talking to Brad Pitt, I guess, after the movie premiered, and he said to Pitt, oh, God, I mean, I'm just so unlikable. And Brad Pitt says, you were never unlikable. And I have to agree, he was totally, I cared about this guy. Did I agree with everything he did? No. Was I angry at him?
He's totally annoying, too.
Totally annoying. However, also
annoying to the point where at a certain point in the film, I just wanted to scream, stop!
Well, this is it. Now, this is it. Because in the whole movie, I had existential angst. I mean, for me, it was just total torture. Do I ever want to see this movie again? I don't think so. Except I
agree with that.
I highly recommend it,
but I don't want to see it again.
It's just exhausting. It's fantastic. I think they did everything right. Now, the other thing in this about the jewel, the gem, the uncut gems, is there was an awful lot of confinement in this movie. Things were in safes. Things were in boxes. Things were locked in stores. Things were locked in trunks. Things were locked in phones. I mean, over and over again, everything was one trap, and it made me think of Plato's cave. Again, this feeling of coming out of something and achieving something. For me, he was definitely a winner by the end of this film. I don't know if we're going to talk about the end of the film, but for me, it was total restoration. And the problem that I had with him was that it goes to the movie No Country for Old Men, is that you think, or The Counselor by Cormac McCarthy, you think you're in this world and you're dealing with criminals and gangsters and you're on top of it. There is an energy out there, not just the death wish, but death, that it has its own rules. And if you thought you were gambling with that, you are so naive. We have nothing to do with those choices. Do you know what I'm saying? And that. I don't know if we want to give away the end of the movie
three
or
things.
What.
Yeah. Three things. First of all, I thought of the Motorhead song, Ace of Spades, Dicing with the Devil.
Oh, yeah.
That's the first thing I thought of. The second thing I thought of was, well, two films. One, The Joker,
Yes.
In that it was, the whole film was centered around Adam Sandler's performance.
True.
Much like the Joker was centered around Joaquin Phoenix's splendid performance. Adam Sandler, who is known as an actor that has vehicles. It's another Adam Sandler film, right? But he's really eclipsed himself as an actor in this film. And I mean, his performance is just something else.
Sure, but he's been in a few movies that I think he's been above and beyond. And one is the Meyerowitz Stories, again on Netflix with Dustin Hoffman. He's fantastic. A great family drama with Dustin Hoffman playing an artist, a hotshot New York artist who's fading from glory. I really highly recommend it. And Punch Drunk, which I loved Adam Sandler in too. I think it was Emily Watson, but a beautiful movie. So for him, for serious acting, I have no problem with Adam Sandler. I totally believe it. And I was also a huge fan of his golf movie, his hockey movie. I loved all those vehicles. You know, I like comedies, though. I thought he was fantastic. I love him from Saturday Night Live. And also, he has an outstanding cultural moment for me. After 9/11, when they had the Concert for Heroes, Adam Sandler brought out his opera singer. And to me, it was, fuck you guys. And it will always stay as one of the highlights of pop culture or communication. When he was able to re-bring that old SNL character back to life after 9/11. Profound.
Interesting. I did not see that. I don't know it.
Right. Yeah, no, it was a concert they did for the firefighters and people after New York City about 10 days after 9/11. They had all kinds of bands like Billy Joel and The Who. I think that I don't know who else. Bruce Springsteen. And then they had comics come out and do something. And he came and did that. It was pretty cool. So I don't know. What about this cave thing? What about this? First of all, the jewelry stores have these incredible doors that are bulletproof. And so you're always locking yourself in. And then within his jewelry store, there was his office he would lock himself in.
It was like there was a compression chamber. There were two sets of locks, and one of the locks never worked right. But he knew how to right. fix the lock to make it work by like shoving a file or something into the sensor. It really drew attention to the fact that he's in this kind of cave or cocoon, and you see the cave at the beginning right. of the film as well. And the cave is protecting him, his office is protecting him from these really nasty dudes who one of them is his relative who he owes money to, who has these henchmen who just want to kill him.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me. I really want to talk about everything that happens in the movie because it's so exciting. For one thing, weird things happen that you can't predict would happen, just like life. So there's a whole randomness. I think you could write something about the randomness of life in this, some kind of chaos thing happening. One is his driving force to gamble. So he likes gambling very much. He gambles on basketball. He gambles on sports. He gambles on his girlfriend. He has a mistress. He has a wife. He gambles with time all the time. He's almost always late. And he's just pushing his existence right to the edge of what you could possibly do. In some ways, he's like an athlete. And
and also his entire existence is in completely in the moment.
It is. I thought that was beautiful. For
me
personally.
He wants to be with his wife when he's with his wife.
Yes.
He wants to be with his mistress when he's with his mistress.
Yes.
When he sees the basketball star, he wants to be with the basketball star. When there's a score, he'll get something and he'll pawn pawn it in order to get money to bet on something else, totally. So that he can get money to bet on something else. And the whole thing is this escalating house of cards that you can see can't possibly sustain itself. And everybody else in the film, with the exception of his mistress, who is kind of just like him in a way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Everybody else can see that the house of cards is going to collapse.
Sure.
For me, his wife totally sees it. Sure. And at one point in the film, he ends up naked in a trunk of a car.
That is such a funny moment in the film where
his wife lets him out and there's like no discussion about it.
Right. Well, it's also very funny because he calls her from his cell phone. He gets trapped into a trunk and locked into a trunk by this guy played by Eric Bogazian, who I was very happy to see in the film. And he calls his wife, and his wife comes there at a school theater. His daughter's in a play. She comes running. The way she comes running out is just the most perfect wife thing. She's running like it's so unflattering, but she's running like a crazy lady out to open up the car, right? She's got her automatic clicker, opens up the trunk, and he comes sitting out, and no explanation, no nothing. Well, I started laughing in that, and I was the only person the theater was full. I was the only person laughing at that point because I think everybody was so afraid during this movie to let go and laugh. And then once I laughed, my friend Andrew started laughing, and then other people around in the theater started laughing. I thought that was such a beautiful moment. And you're right, he lives perfectly in the moment. That's the other thing I loved about Howard, was he was right in there problem solving all the time. He was making his problems too, but was he?
Problem solving caused bigger problems.
Sure. Well, so I think
his living in the moment propelled him into a constantly uncertain and disastrous future.
True, except I'm going to say that this was a post-Empire movie. This might be officially the first post-Empire movie I've seen because it's over, it's done, that is behind us. America is not the superpower anymore. We are, again, going back to The Parasite and other films where we see capitalism. His whole gambling is because we have a society on this. His whole job, he has to provide for his family. He's the breadwinner. He has to make all these things. He has to juggle all these plates at once order.
But he chooses to find a job in which he's constantly the wheeler dealer.
Right,
he's constantly dealing with people who are criminals and hangers-on and bookies and gangsters and sports figures. Like, he propels himself into this world, and also the world of celebrity. You know, at one point he says, "Oh, I know all the DJs in town."
Yeah, that's really funny.
And you believe that he does.
Absolutely. Because,
but, you know, it reminds me of another film, and I'm going to say that maybe it was also a post-Empire film, if we're going to use that example.
Okay.
And it reminded me so much of this film, and that is the most recent of the Mad Max films.
Oh, Fury Road, or I love that film. Oh,
whatever the last one was called,
with Charlize Theron. I mean,
it's the most amazing film.
It is.
In which, like, the film starts and it's like, go.
Yes.
And you just are propelled through this film in an uncontrollable way. And it's, you know, visually amazing. The action's really amazing. It's like a strange, crazy dance.
Right.
And this film is like that too.
Yeah,
very, very much. And I thought that was the good part of the film.
Right.
You know, I think it's just a very, very good film. I'm not convinced it's a great film. I think it could also be looked at in another way, as a simple, sad.
Oops, I lost you. I can't hear you.
Of somebody head for disaster.
Okay, sure.
You can't hear me.
I didn't hear you for a little bit. I heard simple, sad guy running for disaster. I think I did hear that.
That's all I said.
Oh, good. Okay, then I did hear you, but you were fading out. Yeah, I think so too, but couldn't we say that about all the human race? Couldn't we say that about our life in general? His gambling is his grasping to have Elan Vital, to have a life force, to be the God figure in a chaos universe where we have no free will. I love the juxtaposition with his family and the sacred dinner they had together. I thought it was so beautiful. There were thematic things with dripping blood and dripping water and the goldfish that I thought were really beautiful. And the goldfish goes again to the idea that we're in confinement, that we're in a goldfish bowl that we're watching. And a film is doing that too. A film is giving us this confined space, and we can't interrupt it. We can't stop it. We're stuck in the theater. And I think these filmmakers are laughing at us that we're stuck in this crazy roller coaster. I haven't felt that much stress since Pulp Fiction. And when Pulp Fiction came out, I thought it was just total chaos. Now, once I saw it second, third, fourth time, I saw a kind of contained logic in it.
Sure. But, and like Mad Max, there's no respite from the tension.
No.
There's no respite from the tension in Howard's life either.
Right. No,
right. Because Howard is just propelled from one disaster to another. And just when the disaster is about to become total, he finds some miraculous way to pull a rabbit out of the hat and, you know, keep the action going.
Well, it's interesting because this will be a big ending spoiler, but we've talked about the wife. So at one point, that family dinner, we find out this is some of the good storytelling. There's some really subtle, interesting, simple, good storytelling in this film. These guys must really enjoy it because Eric Bogosian puts him in the trunk. His wife gets him out of there. She has no idea why he's in the trunk. They never talk about it. Then we go to their family dinner and the camera pans around to the people at the table and Eric Bogosian is his brother-in-law. So you're going, how could this just be Howard? His whole family's in on this. His grandfather seems to not want to be in on this, or his father, Judd Hirsch. At some point, we think he's...
Oh, yes, but he gets dragged into it,
too. He gets dragged into it, too, and he can't seem to stop it. But I feel like that's life. We are dragged into this. It is fortune as well. Wheel. We know that there's a gamble. We don't know, are we going to make it? Are we going to hit by a truck today? What do we do to have some life force that we feel is our own? And I feel like the redemption for this, to me, by the way, I knew how the movie was going to end as soon as it started. I went, there's nowhere else for this to go. This is because we're all terminal cases, as John Irving would say. We're watching this microcosm of his life. But, you know, was that one day? Was that one week? Or is that 70 years? It doesn't matter how old he is. He's going to die. And so he gets locked into this jewelry. He locks himself into his jewelry store because Kevin Garnett, who is a real life basketball player, becomes obsessed with this opal that we find at the beginning of the movie. And he believes that it gives him good luck in his basketball game. And this starts a whole bunch of problems where Howard, Adam Sandler, can't pay off his debts because he can't get this opal back into his possession. So it's a juggling of chasing down, and it's a quest, kind of a journey. He has to run to Baltimore and all these, or Pittsburgh or something. I mean, it's one stupid event after another that gets worse. Eventually, he tells this basketball player, because it's set in 2012, the filmmakers have used a real life basketball game to their advantage in the story. They have Adam Sandler say, look, you can take this opal and you're going to win this game, and I'm going to bet all the money I have on this game, and you're going to win because your balls are so big right now. Your gusto is so intense. You're going to win this game. There's no way you're not going to win. And what happens is the criminals who he owes money to come into his jewelry store. He lets them out, but he locks them in a time capsule inside the glass doors of his jewelry store.
In between... In the space between the outside and the inner offices, between two locked doors.
Right.
And the glass is bulletproof.
The glass is bulletproof. They have a gun. And Eric Bogosian, his brother-in-law, is one of the guys trapped in here with like two Russian mobsters, it looks like, I think. I don't know who these guys are. But they've been coming after him the whole movie. So if you don't know the outcome of the basketball game, it's very exciting. If you do know the outcome, I'm sure that takes away some of your stress. But what happens is that during the game, he calls a bet where he has to call every, it's like the trifecta in the horse race, only he has 5 points he has to hit in this basketball game to get all of this.
Yes, it's an impossible, crazy
bet.
And his, you know, and everybody, of course, knows it's an impossible bet.
Especially
Adam Sandler character, Howard, totally believes
in it. Right, and his brother-in-law thinks he's an idiot, but you see his brother-in-law in this hour, because it's only an hour long game, basketball's about an hour, right?
He becomes a believer.
He becomes a believer, and he admires his brother brother-in-law probably for the first time and can't believe it. He's part of this reward. He's part of these two men. It's probably the first time they've ever been happy and in the moment, completely empowered ever in their life. And it's so rewarding. It's so rewarding to see this happen in the movie.
By the way, part of the impetus for this film was that the Sadfi brothers' father was a diamond dealer. Yes.
And they based some of these characters on people their dad knew. So that's pretty exciting. They grew up in Manhattan. Their mom lived in Manhattan and their dad lived in Queens. And they apparently go around and just hang out in areas and create scripts from that. They're very young. They're like 33 years old or something. They're very young. So I think it's going to be pretty exciting to see what they do in the future.
Where they take film. I agree. Yeah. If they continue to do work that is at this level, like it or hate it, you're going to have to reckon with it. It's a force out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. When I first read a little review of this film, it talked about it as being, you know, a heist film with gangsters and a guy trying to get a big score. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like it was like, well, most heist films.
Yeah.
But it's really nothing like most heist films.
No.
And it's not really about the heist.
It's not really. It isn't really. I guess it's about what we do in our life and the world we live in. What's also interesting is that you said the cinematography is fantastic. And I love that they were on their faces. Most of the movie is you're right up on people's faces.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like the kind of the new wave French filmmakers back in the day. I just love that they were worshiping the human face. They also go through the opal one more time, but they do it in a different way. What happens is at the very end, there's a bullet wound. And the camera goes into the bullet wound, and then it eventually goes into space and possibly the opal. And I just think it's asking us what we're made of, who are we, what's reality, and also where was that humanness? We have all this admiration for money and power. There's a lot of gold and jewelry in this movie and really bad gangster clothing and bad jewelers clothing and watches that I think are hideous but super cool at the same time.
Oh yeah, and the basketball dudes all love this stuff.
Oh, they love it. Yeah. Well, I guess everybody does because he's got the DJs. That's why he knows the DJs. They all want to buy these crazy big huge garish gaudy jewelry
and in then, some cases fake Rolexes.
That's right. And then we go into the jewel that is the human body. Once again, we start with that at the beginning and it kind of goes into reverse again through the blood of a bullet hole and into space and into what seems to be the opal.
So this film is very much like another film we talked about recently, The Irishman.
Yes.
It was released in the theaters, but it's going to Netflix.
Oh.
And it's a Netflix production.
I did not know that.
And so I think it's going to be in the theaters for a month or something like that. Then it's going to be available on Netflix.
Oh.
So if you can't get out to see it at the theater here in Toronto, it's not in wide release. We had to go to the TIFF Lightbox to see it.
Oh, it's in wide release here. And as I say, I think the theaters have been full for a week or so. It really had a lot of buzz and interest in it. And that's pretty cool that it's going to be on Netflix. It's going to look great because their other movie, Good Time, looks fantastic. It doesn't, again, because they focus on the faces so much, I think that really suits Netflix. And this is a good year for Martin Scorsese because he was an executive producer on this film, Uncut
Yes.
Gems. So he's obviously gotten some kind of deal with Netflix.
I suppose he does. But again, here's another film which put next to that Scorsese film makes the Scorsese film The Irishman seem like a poorer film in my view.
Okay.
And in fact, another thing, since we talked about that, I hardly remember much of that film. It's really become very forgettable for me.
Okay. I remember quite a bit. I guess, obviously I enjoyed it a bit more than you did. I enjoyed it significantly more than you did. And that's okay. You know,
I think so.
Yeah, I liked it.
That's
and
right.
I feel like it's a feel good movie.
As somebody said, you do you.
Yeah.
And I'll do me.
I'll do me. Like, I've actually watched the first hour of it twice now.
Oh, have you really?
Yeah, because Andrew watched it with us when we were here, and Steg and I had already started to rewatch it. So I've watched that part twice. So I'm ready for the next 2 hours. I just think I'll get a, you know, some chips and lay on the floor and enjoy it. I find it kind of relaxing.
I might not watch Uncut Gems again, but I will watch the next film they come out with, and right. I will try to go back and see their back catalog.
Yeah.
Because they just come out of the blue, as far as I was concerned. Right, I don't know their films at all. And, you know, the first I heard about this one was hearing praise of Adam Sandler's performance.
Right.
Which, you know, really was a magnificent performance. I think...
terrific.
He was really just intense and annoying and so fantastic much. All the so way
much.
Through.
I enjoyed him so much, and I liked his teeth.
Yeah.
He had a big set of teeth on there. Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I hope people watch it. Yeah, wait till next month. Maybe we'll put that on our post saying next month when it comes out on Netflix, watch it. This is going to have obviously spoiler alerts. Too late for that now. I just like the idea of us actually talking about the film because we both have seen it and hopefully other people will see it before they listen.
Yes. Yeah. So I think this was this is not the easiest film to watch in a lot of ways, but a fantastic film to watch in a lot of ways. I recommend it. Go see it.
I do
if
too.
If you possibly can, or see it on Netflix. But I think if you can see it on the big screen, especially for the opening sequence, it really will benefits from the larger screen, as many films do.
Yeah, I agree. So my post-Empire Kafka-esque existential angst is what I would term this movie. Total
I agree.
Pain, total pain. Torture. Okay.
So thanks for listening, we'll be back at you soon.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Bye.
All right, no Aubrey, we got one in.